This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Chuck Connor, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Chuck Connor next. America's 11,000 sugar beet and sugarcane farmers count on a strong U.S. sugar policy to keep American consumers supplied with an essential ingredient. Better yet, it's designed to cost taxpayers nothing. These farmers support more than 151,000 jobs throughout the sugar supply chain in both urban and rural communities. They contribute over $23 billion to the economy each year and help keep it sweet in America. Learn how the Farm Bill supports sugar crop farmers and workers at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Uncertainty is a common word when discussing agriculture issues across the nation and on Capitol Hill. Chuck Connor, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, is a veteran on farm policy in Washington. He says the nation's farmer-owned cooperatives have anticipated challenges and are stocked and ready for the 2025 planting season.
It's been an uncertain winter. Particularly for those cooperatives that are involved in, you know, any kind of fertilizer sales, which are many of my members. They were, I think, for the most part, able to get in all the product, you know, they wanted, particularly ahead of, you know, all this discussion of tariffs. They sort of anticipated some of this, and so they are fully ready for a very vibrant spring out there of planting, particularly corn and soybeans, and again, generally speaking, I think are ready to go. And in these uncertain times, that's really good news because you can't take that for granted.
It's a broad question, but it's happening in Washington, this DOGE effort of downsizing. It's even affecting the Department of Agriculture. Are there particular areas that USDA would normally have covered that now are pushing back on states or creating questions for cooperatives in their service of farmers?
Well, over the last two decades, Jeff, the traditional cooperative services branch of USDA has shrunk considerably. And prior to DOGE, I think there were only three or four full-time employees that worked exclusively at the USDA on cooperative issues. And again, at one time, it was a, you know, a big chunk of the agency. So there's been a big change. You know, the size of the federal government employee-wise is the same or less today than it was in the Reagan administration. And that's certainly been true at USDA. There are a lot fewer employees there today than there were when I, you know, managed the agency long ago. And so some of that has already occurred. Certainly, we're expecting that as the DOGE team is in there that, you know, there's going to be additional areas, including in cooperative services, where they're going to take a hard look at these things. And USDA is going to have to justify the existence of the programs and the employees. And in this case, I expect Secretary Rollins to be fully behind those efforts, and we'll see where it goes.
When we talk about tariffs, how does it affect the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives similarly to other groups, but unlike other groups?
Well, I think it probably is similar to other groups. A lot of farmer-owned cooperatives are in the export business. A lot of farmer-owned cooperatives are in the import business. You know, we've talked about fertilizer. If you're in the fertilizer business in this country, you are importing product, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they've been dealing already with these on-again, off-again tariffs and the threats of, you know, trade disruption, knowing that as a farmer-owned co-op, when your owner customer comes walking through the door, particularly looking for fertilizer products, they're not wanting you to say, well, I think I've got that truck coming across from Canada in 2 weeks. You know, they're wanting it now. That's spring planting in America. That's the way we operate. And so that is always a challenge. But again, I think there was enough foreshadowing of a lot of this that was going to happen that these companies have taken precautionary measures. They brought in product. They've stored it. they've, you know, in some cases in the export business shipped, you know, a little bit early. And so, you know, they're doing all that they can to manage it. But having said that, Jeff, you know, the uncertain times that we're in, this is an uncertainty out there that is just, you know, it's creating a lot of chaos out there in the marketplace today.
So perhaps not the extreme that it would have happened if it had been a month ago or 2 months ago, but still could have an impact into this season in terms of supplies coming into the country.
Certainly still could have an impact. And, you know, I'm quickly reminded, you know, we got a 1 month reprieve on a lot of duties and tariffs from Canada and Mexico, but it's coming fast. No one knows for sure how this is going to end up, but the uncertainty in the marketplace, agriculture, food products, our entire sector is built around supply and certainty, and we're going to be there supplying the food that you need. You don't need to worry about, you know, reliability or anything of that sort. And all these things sort of put additional chinks in that reliability armor, and that's not good for business.
This is not critical of the audience that was at the Food and Ag Policy Summit. Some of the great minds and the great stalwarts of agriculture in Washington, but one of the more common answers that I heard to so many different questions is, we just don't know.
Right.
This is a time that there are so many plates that are spinning and so many people involved, but at this point, no particular and specific path for how things are going to move forward, and a lot of it's tied to money.
I think we're letting our political leaders get by with just simply saying, you know, these are uncertain times. We need better certainty in our policy. And that certainly applies to tariffs. It applies to taxes, as we also talked about at the summit. But, you know, it also applies to this farm bill that is 2 years overdue. I mean, normally producers, at least they can always fall back on, well, I know what the farm program is going to be. We don't. And, you know, it's just one uncertainty after another. But yet, as I've said, farmers are going to the fields. They're going to go to the fields here shortly. And my prediction is, despite all that uncertainty, that we're going to have a pretty normal spring planting season.
At Commodity Classic, I had a conversation with Chandler Gould. This is not my thought. It's a conversation with Chandler. I asked him his thoughts on the farm bill. He said this: the budget reconciliation that's coming may very well be a pathway to a farm bill. But if the farm bill comes in budget reconciliation, the dollars will be extremely tight. So it will be hard to get better reference prices. It will be hard to get more money for nutrition and research and market development and all these other things. It might deliver a bill, but it might not be the bill that many people want. The other idea is that there could come a standalone bill, but how would you get a standalone bill on ag policy through a Congress right now that is so splintered?
Yeah. You know, a lot of the tough farm bills have been done as part of reconciliation. And, you know, this is clearly a tough farm bill. So you have to consider that reconciliation may be an option. I don't disagree with Chandler that, you know, the downside to reconciliation is you're usually reconciling lower, right? You're not reconciling more money. It's usually some kind of savings that's put into place. And, you know, we might have thinner resources. Whether it's a bill standalone or a farm bill in reconciliation, I do think, Jeff, though, Republicans have to deliver higher reference prices in Title I. I think they have gotten so far out there in the last 2 years, and, you know, the farm bill has just turned so much on these reference prices and the need to, if you will, modernize them. Even in a reconciliation process, I don't see how they get by with not raising reference prices in some way.
I've not spoken with House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson in a few weeks now, but the last note that I saw him suggest was that if we don't have a farm bill by June, he'll most likely be back in front of Congress looking for additional economic assistance into the fall, just simply because of the disparity between the prices that are being offered for row crop commodities and the safety net that producers have, even crop insurance.
Well, I don't doubt that at all. I think that the bigger question then is, you know, how does that get done? And, you know, and it may be just as difficult to get that kind of assistance done as it is, you know, to actually get a you know, a longer term farm bill across the finish line as well. And so I don't discount the need for that economic assistance. You know, you saw the numbers that were released at the USDA Outlook Conference here, and, you know, our pop in overall net farm income, you know, last year came almost exclusively because of, you know, additional disaster type payments that were made to agriculture. And I'm sure Chairman Thompson is looking at that and saying, at a minimum, you know, we've got to sort of keep things where they were, and we can't allow that farm income to drop to where it would have been last year had we not had the economic aid.
What do your members say about the economic climate across the country? Is it strained?
Yeah, it is. It's different, and it's, you know, it's more strained than it was, Jeff. And I don't want to overstate it, because, again, I have said, you know, we're going to have a normal planning. For the most part, most producers have gotten their financing and they're able to put the, you know, their crop in the ground. But it's clearly, you know, continues to move in a direction where fewer and fewer producers are actually covering their costs for the 2025 crop.
So there are some really big plates spinning. One of those is taxes. Senator Grassley says if we don't take action on taxes this year, take no action at all, it'll be the biggest tax increase that we have seen perhaps ever. We have a debt ceiling that is coming, likely in June, and we're still looking for how we fund government and write a farm bill in the midst of so many other things. Which pieces fall first?
You know, you can make a reasonable case, Jeff, and I tried to a little bit at the summit in saying that, you know, this is a Congress that, because of the narrow margins, they have trouble, you know, garnering 50 votes for just about anything. And so they pass very little legislation. So with all those things that you've identified, you know, can they pass four different bills, debt ceiling, taxes, farm bill, another budget for, you know, 2026, I think that's a very, very heavy lift for this Congress. Could they put all that together and pass one giant bill of some kind? Perhaps. And I don't think that's an option that's being totally thrown off the table just because of their inability, you know, to go to the well and get all the Republicans united together to vote for something four different times now. That's a big lift.
If the tax issue isn't resolved, if it's not extended, if it's not written, what impact does estate tax and 1099 and past, what effect does that have on the cooperatives of the country?
It would have a big impact. You know, the cooperatives use the 199A small business deduction in a very big way. They oftentimes they keep it at the co-op level and use that for, you know, modernizing equipment and the like, but more often than not, they pass that right back to the individual producer to take that 199A deduction off their own taxes as a, you know, farmer member, of, you know, owner of that company. If you take away that deduction, it's been important enough over the last several years that there's virtually nothing else you can do to keep farmers from having to pay, you know, dramatically more taxes. And we're talking about, you know, the uncertainty and the farm economy starting to, you know, move in the wrong direction and the like. And you're going to impose a huge tax increase on farmers. I just don't see this Congress getting by with doing that.
We heard Senator Thune also say that he was committed to the estate tax and perhaps seeing that eliminated. I don't know if that's an elimination factor, if there's the political will on Capitol Hill, but clearly when we talk about, I mean, it would be easy for individuals who cast ballots to look and see, well, if we don't do this, then here comes revenue. Here's an opportunity right. to add to the coffers, which is something that Congress needs right now. But what's the impact on rural America? What's the impact on small businesses, and how does that affect the economy?
Yeah, you know, I just don't see this Congress having any appetite for, you know, any kind of additional tax burden, whether it's, you know, in the form of 199A, estate taxes, accelerated depreciation, all those kinds of things that are tools in the farmer's toolbox out there that they use to manage their taxes. And without them, their taxes are going to go up. I see no appetite for this Congress to do that. And if they do, I think they are jeopardizing what has been their stalwart support in rural America. And they know that. And I can't see them letting that happen.
Well, outside of doing it and doing it completely, tax reform, or doing absolutely nothing, is there anything in between?
Well, there, you know, we talked in several forums that I've been involved in about, you know, is there a one-year extension of current tax policy or a two-year extension or something like that? And I suppose that's always possible. And oftentimes when Congress faces tough decisions, they have a tendency to kick the can down the road for a year or two, you know, and see, you know, what happens later on, which they have, of course, done for the farm bill that we've been watching so closely. I think the tax thing might be different, though. I'm not sure they even get by with just sort of kicking the can down the road. I think there is an expectation here that the prior Trump administration delivered on the Tax Cut and Jobs Act and passed that. And I don't see this president not holding their feet to the fire and saying, you know, if we did it last time, you're certainly going to do it for me again this time. And I just see that being a very, very strong push to get, you know, at a minimum, an extension of the current tax policy. And certainly President Trump has, you know, laid out several issues where he would like to see even additional tax cuts put in place, Social Security, tax on tips, you know, some other priorities like that.
It's clearly that voters like it when money's coming their way, and they don't seem to like it when it goes back the other way. So,
No. So
let's add a twist to this, because the president has mentioned more than once that the tariffs would help to offset the tax cuts. Mm-hmm. So the longer the tariffs are in place, the more pain that it may bring upon the U.S. economy. That also seems to be a seesaw and a balancing effect.
Yeah, I've heard the president make those statements a lot, Jeff. I will just tell you that I have not seen any data to suggest that, you know, you can sort of tariff your way into any kind of notable revenue to offset, you know, the cost of the $4 to $5 trillion tax bill. You know, the tax bill is in trillions. You know, even a tariff circumstance that is working, not even taking into account that, you know, markets will change and people will, you know, change their buying patterns depending upon those tariffs. If you just assume that that doesn't even happen, you know, tariffs are hundreds of millions. You know, trillions versus hundreds of millions, it just, you know, it's not even kind of playing in the same ballpark.
So make sure that I'm on path here. We now have funded the government with action from the House and the Senate through the end of the fiscal year. But in terms of budget reconciliation, the House has this idea of one big beautiful bill that I've heard, and the Senate says we'll take a couple of swings at it. Look in the Chuck Connor crystal ball, as you've been around Washington for so long. What do you see here?
I think they're going to do one bill. And I've seen some loose comments from important members of the Senate in the last, you know, several days acknowledging that it is going to be a one bill, you know, process at this point. So it will be one. I don't know whether you're going to call it beautiful, depending on your perspective, but it is going to be one bill. And again, I think that just reflects what we talked about earlier, that this is not a Congress where you can go to the well 3, 4, 5 times to pass major legislation. They just, you know, the Speaker of the House won't be able to keep his, you know, folks together to do that. Maybe they can do it once or twice, but, you know, they've got to really limit how many times they go to that well and demand that all of their Freedom Caucus members get in line and you know, vote for anything, really.
So what big issues are set in front of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives? With all the other things that we've talked about, not once did we mention labor. And at one time when you and I talked, you said that was your number one issue.
Yeah, labor continues to be important. Jeff, and we're anxious to sort of see some of these border security issues play out a little bit more and, you know, maybe calm down, if you will, a little bit more, because I think the last time we talked, I said we know that we have very little chance at solving any of our labor issues and our foreign labor issues. as long as, you know, there is a view out in the countryside that our borders are totally porous and anybody can come and go anytime they want. Obviously, the first 100 days of the Trump administration, they are working very, very hard, you know, to shut that down. And I think some would say maybe they already have done that. But certainly once, you know, we can openly declare the border is secure, then we want to talk to the Trump administration about now, how can we get the legal workforce that we need, you know, across the border to pick our crops and milk the cows and do all the things that we're going to need done that we don't have the labor here in the U.S. to do.
Even revising the H-2A is not enough for you, is it?
Well, revising it, the main thing you need with the, you know, changes to the H-2A, Jeff, is the ability to bring them in to do what is considered year-round work. Work in the dairy barns, you know, work for livestock operations. Obviously, livestock, you know, they don't take Saturdays and Sundays off. You know, they don't take holidays. It's literally year-round work. And right now, by statute, H-2A prohibits a foreign worker coming in here and doing any kind of year-round work. And that's kind of fundamentally one of the big things we need. Obviously, the second thing is we believe the wage rates under H-2A are very inflationary, far in excess of any kind of wage rate increase that we see for U.S. workers. And so, you know, we need to reform that wage rate calculation as well.
I was taken back when President Trump offered his note on social media saying farmers prepare to produce for more for the U.S. I don't know where in the U.S. we consume more row crops. You could add livestock, but you're not going to add livestock that fast to that particular volume. The only thing that these eyes see is a big growth in renewable fuel, but yet I don't see a push yet from Congress or the administration to greatly expand opportunity there, much less investment there, to help sustainable aviation fuel or other areas get off the ground.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, that may come, and you know, we hope it comes eventually, but we're not seeing evidence of that right now, Jeff.
But still, it's going to take money.
It's going to take money, and you know, we are still in a circumstance where, you know, much of what we produce, Jeff, it does, you know, we're surplus producers, you know, of raw commodities. You know, we lived by the statement, you know, for many, many decades that, you know, we wanted to continue to maximize that commodity production so that we could be, you know, the supplier to the world. And that has maybe fallen a little bit out of favor. I, for one, still believe in that basic mentality that we ought to be growing, you know, as much as we possibly can in order to, you know, compete in those markets and you know, go head to head with the Brazilians and really go after a lot of these markets overseas, because that's, you know, that's where the population growth is. We're not going to have big population growth to handle our productivity increases in the U.S. under any circumstance. Those are, you know, that growth is in foreign markets.
The one last thought that I have for you is farmers have said this, and I think I've heard you say this before, that agriculture really needs certainty.
I think it's going to take a little bit of time, but yes, I do see that happening down the road a little bit. And again, there's a lot of uncertainty, you know, right now in these government agencies with the Doge team that's in there and in place. I mean, you know, everybody is running a little bit scared. I don't necessarily think that's a horrible, you know, thing to, you know, for people to be, you know, a little concerned about their job, and that, you know, it always kind of raises productivity, I guess, a little bit. So I'm not wildly concerned about that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we do need key people in these places. I use EPA as an example, you know. Federal Grain Inspection Service, at USDA, you do not export, you know, without that Federal Grain Inspection Certificate. And, you know, we need the people there. And again, for, you know, a lot of our fresh fruit and vegetable exports, you can't say, well, the inspector is going to be here rotating through next week. No, you know, it's got to be now. So there's vital functions there, Jeff, that need to be taken care of. And again, I think we're going to sort through that over the next few months. You know, I'm not totally offended by some people coming in and rattling the cage a little bit. I think, you know, that's probably a healthy process, but we do need it to settle out here pretty quickly so that we know, you know, who's going to be there and what their functions are going to be, because some of these functions are absolutely vital to our well-being.
Well, Chuck Conner, thank you. You have certainly paid your dues in Washington, D.C., from the regulatory standpoint to the legislative standpoint, and now certainly for the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. Thanks for being here again on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and Chuck, you got the last word today.
Well, let me just say, Jeff, at the, you know, at the end of the day, I believe, you know, Congress is going to take, you know, a number of actions here that are going to provide some help to us. And I have confidence we're going to get a tax bill done. I can't tell you exactly how. It's going to be messy, but we're going to get a tax bill done. I do believe there's a strong desire for a farm bill this year. And, I'm generally optimistic in the midst of, you know, a lot of instability right now that has caused, you know, some pessimism among a lot of my colleagues. But I see all of this working out and being okay here in the next few months.
Our thanks to Chuck Conner, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.